attached to you while you were in the bar. Not all astral attachments will take your energy down, but many will. Astral attachments, also called entity attachments, come in many forms. Just as in the physical realm, where harmful bacteria, viruses, and parasites can wreak havoc in our lives, there are also non-physical kinds of pathogens that can attach to us and disrupt our lives. They are etheric beings that are generated by human thoughts and that have been infused with emotion and intent. Astral entities more or less float around in the ethers and can latch on to someone who is vulnerable, overly open, or tired. They can feel and even look parasitic. Ugh. Clairvoyants describe them as appearing in various grotesque forms. The first time I saw these entities, I was in the hospital after my dramatic near-death trauma when I was 17. There were a lot of these misshapen beings in the hospital hallways and in the hospital rooms. Some floated around, others were glued to a hospital bed or chair, and they seemed to influence the thoughts and emotions of those near them. Many of them looked like gremlins or trolls. They looked so real, I was surprised that no one else seemed to see them. The great thing is that entity attachments are fairly easy to remove. In Chapter 3, you'll learn methods to remove astral attachments. Some of the most damaging astral attachments are glued into folks who have taken a lot of drugs or who are habitually drunk. Drugs such as methamphetamine seem to create the largest rips in one's auric field, and it's not uncommon to see quite a number of astral attachments on a meth addict, to the point where sometimes these beings cloud out or even overtake the person's personality. When our home was being built, one of the builders had a number of laborers who worked for him. One laborer, whom I'll call Raymond, was a happy-go-lucky guy. It was a joy to be around, and he always looked for what was positive in the world. When our beloved dog Pepper died, Raymond kindly dug the grave for him, for which we'll always be grateful. One day I was chatting with Raymond, and suddenly, seemingly out of nowhere, his eyes turned black. His face seemed to contort into a hideous dark demon. It was like a completely different person was peering into me. I was frightened and shocked. It was like something out of a horror movie. Then, just as suddenly, his face dissolved back to normal features, and I was talking to Raymond again. He didn't seem to be aware that anything had happened, and he just kept chatting. When I scanned him later, I saw that he had numerous astral attachments bored into him. The next day, he didn't show up for work, and we heard later that he'd been taking meth and had committed some robberies, and he was put in jail. Eventually, when he got out of jail, his mannerisms and words were so erratic that his family members placed him in a mental institution. It's not uncommon for astral entity attachments to become so numerous that they overcome a person's natural personality. Raymond is a wonderful human being, but the holes left in his auric field from taking meth allowed dark entities to attach to him. Their energy together was stronger than his innate personality, and they eventually took over. It's possible that a drug addict can have a strong, vibrant, sparkling energy field with no attachments, but it takes a focused, disciplined personality, and this is highly unusual. Do not be concerned about astral entities taking you over or making you mentally ill. They cannot knock you for a loop unless you're about to get knocked over anyway. They can only attach to something within you that's a frequency match. Many people very mistakenly attribute some of the negative things in their lives to entities and astral beings, which in actuality is a way of not owning the challenges in their lives. In other words, they haven't taken responsibilities for the difficulties in their lives, so they erroneously place the blame on astral beings. If someone constantly believes that entity and astral beings are mucking up their life, chances are they're giving them way too much power, or they're a chronic victim of life, or subconsciously they enjoy the added drama in their life. In Chapter 3, you'll learn how to clear astral entity attachments from your energy field. Ghosts and earthbound spirit attachments. Astral attachments are different than ghosts. A ghost is an earthbound soul or discarnate being who died, but hasn't managed to get to the other side. It's stuck on the earth plane, usually because of a strong connection to a place, event, or person. It can be incredibly draining to have a ghost strand attached to you. Everything feels harder to accomplish. It can feel like there's a weight on your shoulders, a constriction in your chest. Luckily, it's very rare to have a ghost attachment, but it can happen. And most usually if the ghost was someone you knew when they were alive, or if they were strongly attached to your place of residence. As with every other kind of cord attachment, a ghost can only wobble you if there's a frequency match. Someone can live in a house for 20 years with a ghost and never know it, and never be bothered by it if there is no frequency match, and there's nothing for the ghost to hook into. Then a visitor can be in the house overnight and have ghostly experiences. In other words, an energy strand forms between the ghost and the visitor, but only if something within the visitor matches something within the ghost. For example, if the ghost was a closet alcoholic when she was alive, and the visitor is also a closet alcoholic, this might form a strand between the two of them. It's important to remember that ghosts cannot hurt you. It's your fear that hurts you. Although they can make you feel afraid, it's the fear that creates the challenges, not the ghost. When Sam, a man who attends my seminars, encountered a ghost, he tried to run and he banged into the wall. He assumed the ghost pushed him into the wall. But when he replayed the events, he realized he was so afraid that he ran into the wall. The ghost didn't push him. Your fear can even create phenomena such as doors slamming, feelings of being pushed, or things floating. The psychic energy of fear can affect physical objects. Additionally, fear actually makes the ghost cling more tightly to you, so it's important to step into your courage. You have a body. They don't. You are in control. Let go of fear, step into grace, sympathy, and love, and the ghost cords will dissolve. The best way to clear ghosts is to treat them like dear friends going through a hard time. Gently, graciously, and lovingly say something like, "Greetings, I'm so sorry to tell you this, but you're dead. Rather, your body is dead." Now, most ghosts don't know they're dead. They're stuck in a kind of trance-like limbo, and they don't realize they've lost their body. It's a revelation to most ghosts to realize they no longer have a body. It can feel like a huge burden is lifted off of them when they learn this. And then you continue. "It's time for you to go to the light. I'm going to light a candle in your honor, and those on the other side will help you enter into the light. I wish you well on your journey." Often you can feel the instant the ghost leaves. The candle flame will rise higher, or there'll be a feeling of lightness that fills the room. It's in that moment that the ghost has indeed gone into the light. Some people are very attached to their ghosts, especially people who are lonely. A ghost in the house feels like a kind of a companion. These are not harmful situations on the whole, and sometimes there's mutual benefit, but in general, it's best for the ghost to go to the light. Ghosts are usually relatively easy to remove or disconnect from, unless you were very emotionally attached to that person when he or she was alive. In very rare cases, you might need a professional ghostbuster. Chapter 2, you'll gain more information about ghosts. Patterns, addictions, and obsession strands. A curious manifestation of cord attachments is when there's a cording to an addictive pattern, a habit, or an obsession. There's an energetic field for every addiction, and if you're plugged into one, it's difficult not to be influenced by it. The challenge is that once you are hooked in to the collective frequency of a pattern, the energy that flows to you from the field increases within you, flows back to the collective energy field to pick up more energy, and then back to you again. It becomes a vicious cycle, which is why it's so hard to stop when there's an addictive pattern, habit, or obsession. These are some of the most important energy strands to remove, and if you don't, they drag you into unproductive, repetitive behaviors. These kind of strands can occur with any kind of unhealthy attachment to things, such as to food, drugs, alcohol, or even to a person. If you're obsessing about something someone did or said in the past, and you keep replaying it over and over, or you keep obsessively looking at their Facebook site, driving by their home, or checking your phone to see if they texted or called, you probably have an obsessive strand attached to that person. If someone is doing this in regard to you, they have an unhealthy strand planted into your energy field. Is there a food that you know is not good for you, but you keep obsessing about it? And then when you eat it, even though your mind is rebelling against you for doing so, you continue to eat more and more? This might mean that you have an obsessive strand plugged into that food frequency. Yes, we can have energy strands connecting us to certain kinds of foods. Unhealthy patterns of behavior and obsessive and addictive strands are some of the most difficult to remove. They often require much more than a cord-cutting ceremony. They require you going into a deep meditative state to find where the cord is attached and then notice the memories and events within you that are connected to it. The next step is to go into each of those events to cord cut. These kind of cords are often interwoven with other strands. So if you cut a cord but don't go to the source of the original cord that it's attached to, it can come back again, sometimes almost immediately. Here's an example of how this works. Brianna called me because she was obsessing about her ex-boyfriend. She said, "Denise, I can't stop. I know I shouldn't, but I feel like I'm a stalker. I drive by his house. I try to see what he's doing on Facebook. I think about him all the time. I know Tim won't call me, but I check my phone over and over again to see if he's called. I take out photos of the two of us. I look at them all the time. I don't even like him that much. But when he broke up with me, I was devastated. I tried cutting the cords, but it didn't work. I need help." In a private session later, Brianna went on a relaxed meditative journey in which she found the Tim strand and followed it deep inside of herself. She was astounded by the memories that she found glued onto the strand. When Brianna was 9 years old, her father abandoned the family. It was devastating for her. She never heard from him again. She thought of her dad all the time and even worried that it was her fault that he left. Even though she'd gotten older and didn't often think of her father, the strands remained in her energy field. So when Tim broke up with her, it was an echo of her father leaving her. The Tim strand had intertwined with her father's strand, so cutting the Tim strand wouldn't be enough. In her meditation, she worked on cutting any unhealthy cords with her father. You can keep a relationship, but clear any negative cords. Just because you release a depleting cord with someone doesn't mean that you no longer have a relationship with that person. It just means a negative strand flowing between the two of you no longer depletes you. This is really valuable to know, especially in regards to family relationships. A week later, Brianna called me. "Denise, it's amazing. I didn't do anything to release Tim, but I've hardly thought of him this last week. Whatever that obsession was, it's completely gone. Releasing my unhealthy dad strands in the meditation seems to have cleared the energy between Tim and me. I feel so much lighter. Thank you." So if you're trying to clear any kind of addictive or obsessive strands, you may need to go deeper to the original strand and clear that one first. Healer, therapist, teacher, doctor strands. If you're a healer or a massage therapist, you probably have had the experience of working on someone who had a particular ache or ailment, and after you worked on her, she left without it, and you seem to have gotten it. Gina was a successful massage therapist who came to me because she seemed to be absorbing all the aches and pains and ailments of her clients. She said, "Denise, they all leave feeling so good and so happy, and I feel drained and seem to be experiencing their ailments." This often occurs because the client forms a strong cord attachment to the healer. The loving energy of the healer flows into the client, and the pain of the client can flow back into the healer. This same kind of attachment can occur between a client and a therapist, a teacher, spiritual mentor, or a doctor. If you are in a helping profession and you feel your energy dip after working with your clients, you may want to learn how to immediately release strand attachment so you don't take on any imbalances. It's very important to know that if you take on an ailment or condition from a client, or even if you absorb something from a friend or acquaintance, it is not the fault of the other person. Do not blame them. It is not their fault. You wouldn't absorb it unless there was some kind of vibrational match within you. If there is any fault, and there isn't, it's your view of that person as unwell or unwhole. When we have deep sympathy for the ills or misfortunes of others, it's not uncommon to absorb their condition into ourselves. This most likely occurs because you are a kind and sympathetic person. However, it also means that you are seeing your client or friend or acquaintance as their disease and misfortune, rather than seeing the whole majestic, remarkable being that they are. If you instead see the other person as not sick or not out of sorts, but as a glorious, strong being, and interact with them as such, you won't take on stuff from them. Additionally, when you treat that individual as if they are whole, strong, and well, it's a call for them to remember who they are and step into even more vitality. If you treat someone as if they're sick or disadvantaged, that is how they tend to see themselves, and that can be a self-fulfilling prophecy. Mantras, chants, and prayer strands. Anytime you say a prayer, such as the Lord's Prayer, or chant the Sanskrit word Om, a strand unfurls and connects you to the collective unconscious of the prayer or chant. Everyone who has said a specific prayer or chanted a particular mantra increases the vibrancy and life force of the collective energy. The more people who chant a mantra or say a prayer, the stronger the life force of that prayer becomes. This is one of the reasons why ancient chants are so powerful. An incredible wellspring of energy has been created by thousands, even millions of people, which in turn creates a profound energy loop. When you chant Om Namah Shivaya, for example, this energy surges on a cord from you to the collective, then there's a potent surge of energy and light back from the collective to you. My first teacher, the Hawaiian kahuna I mentioned in the preference, told me that there was a commanding collective of light and energy associated with the Lord's Prayer that was healing and protective. She wasn't a traditional Christian, but she had a remarkable ability to perceive energy and encourage me to repeat the Lord's Prayer. Interestingly, my Cherokee grandparents often said the Lord's Prayer, but in Cherokee. They also said it had a majesty and a grace. Strands and your chakras. Strings, strands, or filaments of energy can attach anywhere throughout your body. But the most common place on your body for cords to attach is your chakra centers. Chakras are the energy centers of your body. They are aligned with various aspects of your life. For example, the chakra center in the center of your chest is called the heart chakra. This chakra is aligned with matters of the heart. Strings of energy regarding relationships, love connections, lovers, emotions regarding family are most often attached to the heart chakra. When you're working to understand and explore the strands of energy that connect you to the world around you, it's valuable to know a bit about your chakras and the kinds of cords that can attach to the various areas. Here is a list of the chakras and the cords that commonly attach to each of these areas. First chakra. This is the energy center at the base of your spine. This is called your grounding cord and your root chakra. It connects you to the earth and to your physical aspect of self. It supports you in your physical strength and in activating your survival instincts when needed. It's here that sexual cords can attach, especially from traumatic events. It can also be the place where a needy partner might attach. It's also not uncommon for small children to have attachments here. It's a place of grounding and connecting to the Earth Mother for them. It's a kind of energetic home base for them. Additionally, anyone who's trying to control or manipulate you might have cords here. Second chakra. This energy center is about halfway between your navel and your root chakra. It's sometimes called the sacral chakra, although it's higher than your sacrum. Emotions from others often attach here, as well as general emotions and feelings in respect to those around you. This can include emotions regarding lovers. Also, it's common for emotional attachments to groups, religious, spiritual, or political, to reside here. Ancestral groups and family ties are often connected here as well. Third chakra. This is the energy center near your solar plexus, which is called the solar chakra. This energy center often has the most attachments on the body, as it's connected to fear. Any overriding, submerged, or ongoing low-grade fear you have regarding a person or a situation is usually attached here. Also, if you don't have stellar self-esteem, this is often the easiest place for negative attachments to slip through your protective barrier and glom onto your body. Fourth chakra. This chakra, which is located in the center of your chest, is called the heart chakra. Love connections often attach here. This is usually a good thing unless there's an imbalance in the love connection. Often healers and spiritual teachers have attachments here from their patients and their students. When this chakra becomes jammed, it's difficult for love to flow smoothly. There can also be a feeling of hopelessness that occurs from cords attached here. Fifth chakra. This energy center is also called the throat chakra because it's in the center of the lower part of your throat. It's concerned with communication, that is, not communicating what is in your heart or communicating too much inappropriately. If someone is suppressing your ability to communicate, there is often an energy attachment to this chakra flowing from them to you. When this chakra is closed and clogged, it's almost impossible to speak your truth and voice your concerns. Sixth chakra, called the third eye chakra. This center is associated with your intuition and your ability to sense the unseen realms. If someone wants to get into your head or if they desire your wisdom, the attachment usually anchors into the sixth chakra. Additionally, if you are unduly linked to someone who has passed on, this is often where the attachment will occur. Seventh chakra, known as the crown chakra. This is the area that connects us to the divine. Attachments here can be beautiful, sparkling strands of light. But there can also be attachments here from those who see you as the way to the divine. They may want or be envious of your connection to heavenly realms, so they will subconsciously attach here. It's important that this chakra remain clear of attachments from those who desire you to believe without discernment as they believe. These kind of cords often come from religious leaders, teachers, political figures, and dominating individuals. There are other places on the body where attachments occur, but the chakras or energy centers are the most common. Celestial strands. When I was a child, I lived with my grandparents for over 2 years, from age 9 to age 12. My grandmother, on my father's side, was an astrologer. She did my chart the day I was born. She and my grandfather trained with the mystic Manly P. Hall. When I lived with her, my grandmother used to talk to me about the effect and influence of the stars on our lives. She said there were invisible lines between each of us and the stars, in accordance with our position at birth. As a child, I used to imagine I could see these lines of light that she talked about. As an adult, I'm fascinated by our connection to the heavenly bodies. Most of the strands connecting us to the cosmos are so thin as to be almost unrecognizable. Nevertheless, we are profoundly connected to the universe and all that is in it. We each have strands of energy that flow out to the stars, the moon, the sun, and to the vast expanse of celestial bodies. This is why astrology works. Additionally, there are strands of energy that connect us to our angels and spirit guides. These are the strands that are valuable to strengthen so we can increase the connection. You'll be learning how to strengthen the cords that empower you in Chapter 5. Overlapping strands. Sometimes energy cords are knotted together or overlapping, and trying to separate them is like trying to undo a tangle of yarn. When this occurs, there's an interesting dynamic. If one person sends out a strong emotion that travels along a gnarled cord, it can go to all the people whose cords are knotted together. So, if Marcia's feeling depressed and she has a large attachment cord to her friend Jerry and just a filament connected to Ken, who's an acquaintance, but the Jerry and Ken strands are overlapping, her depression and feeling down can go both to Jerry and Ken because they're woven together. Here's another example in which tangled cords appear in the dream state. Helen had a dream about her cousin Jake. But in the dream, his name was Will. He was burying bodies in the backyard. Also, at the makeshift gravesite and kicking dirt into the grave was Teresa, a childhood friend whom Helen hadn't been in touch with for many years. As a young girl, Teresa had continually sabotaged Helen, but by all outer appearances, she seemed innocent. The dream was disturbing and very real. When Helen began to examine it, she thought about what was occurring in her family. Her extended family, including her cousin Jake, was in an intense debate about a will left by her grandfather. Helen thought that the dream reflected that there were some things that were relevant to the will that were being buried. She had suspected that Jake, although outwardly friendly, was the person hiding the information. She didn't think it was an accident that Jake's name in the dream was Will. When she thought about it, she realized there was something similar about Teresa and Jake and the way they acted outwardly nice, but often had hidden agendas. She concluded that their strands had gotten interwoven. She noticed that after that, whatever she thought of Jake, she also thought of Teresa. They had a frequency match, hence their strands were stuck together in Helen's mind. Chances were that any energy sent along the strand to Jake would inadvertently go to Teresa as well. Helen found later that Jake truly was trying to bury some things regarding the will, and he wasn't being forthright. Collateral strands. Sometimes strands of energy travel in a collateral way. Many years ago, before I was married, I traveled to Hawaii to visit my sister and try to recover from a challenging time in my life. I'd never been to Hawaii, and I was excited for my journey. Before I left, a friend gave me a folded piece of paper and said, "Denise, here's the name and phone number of my friend who lives in Hawaii. I think it would be great if you guys met and got together. I'm sure you have a lot in common." I thanked her and stuffed the piece of paper into the bottom of my purse. I loved Hawaii. It was a joy to see my sister, and especially after the dreary darkness of winter in Michigan, the warmth and the sunny weather felt like heaven. As my wounded heart was healing, I found a job as a waitress at one of the pubs along the tropical shore of Waikiki. The bartender, Gary, was cute, and every time I placed an order for a cocktail, I'd joke with him while waiting for him to mix it up. Eventually, we began to date. It was fun learning about the island from his perspective. I found out where the best beaches were and which shops had great deals on jade jewelry. One day, after Gary and I had been dated for several months, I cleaned out my purse. Tucked in a corner was the folded piece of paper that my friend Bridget had given me. I opened it up, and written in her flowery handwriting was Gary's full name and phone number. This is an example of collateral strands, because Bridget was cord-connected to me, and she was also corded to Gary. Gary was collateral to me, but we still connected without knowing about each other beforehand. Soul strands. There are some people we are so deeply connected to on a soul level that even if we are halfway around the world, we can feel each other through our cord connections. I met Monica many years ago when I was in London, teaching at a mind-body-spirit festival. We instantly felt simpatico. It was as if we'd always known each other. Wherever we went, people told us we looked like sisters. Now, this is very strange because I'm a big woman and she's thin. She has pale skin and red hair. I have dark hair and darker skin. She's very stylish, and my style is a retro hippie and usually not too retro. She's from Finland. I'm from the United States. But when we're together, people can sense the soul connection, and they think we look the same. We actually don't look at all the same. When we compared notes about our lives, it seemed a bit out of a sci-fi story because of all the similarities. For example, we both write mind-body-spirit books. We both have daughters who cook for our retreat seminars. In fact, we each have co-authored a cookbook with our daughters. We both started teaching feng shui certification courses at the same time in our respective countries when very few people knew what feng shui was. We both started teaching at the same time something we both named soul coaching. We both always liked to have lilacs for our birthday. But it got even stranger than this, as we would discover things like we would buy the exact same obscure CD on the same day and purchase the exact same shade of lipstick on the same day. The list of similarities was very long, but the strangest thing was something that occurred decades ago before we knew each other. Monica had gone in for some blood work in Helsinki, and the doctor said, "Have you been eating a lot of papayas?" Monica said, "No." The doctor continued, "Well, you must be taking high dosages of papain-enzyme." Monica said, "No, I've never taken papain-enzyme. Why do you ask?" With an astonished look on his face, the doctor said, "Well, the papain-enzymes in your blood are very elevated, and we don't know how to account for it." Curiously, at that exact time of my life, I was living in Hawaii. In the area where I lived, there were papaya trees everywhere laden with fruit just for the picking. I had very little money, so I was living on papayas and mangoes. Consequently, my papain levels must have been very high. Monica and I are connected on such a deep soul level that even though we live thousands of miles from each other, our cord connection is so strong that information and wisdom travels between us almost instantly. There may be people on the planet with whom you share soul strands with also. You may meet them or you may never come in contact with them, but the connections are so strong they can be felt through time and space. Computer and social media strands. A modern kind of courting exists within the realm of the internet. You can have connecting strands to Facebook friends whom you've never met in person. Thus, it's a good idea to make sure your social media friends are people with whom you feel good. The emails that come into your computer and stay in your archive can be connected to you by thin strands of energy. Are there emails that don't feel good to you that you can eliminate? If you've saved phone messages from people with whom you have cut cords, those messages will continue to reconnect you to the frequency of those people. By keeping the messages, you're keeping a bit of their energy. The people you have in your address list, even if you don't think about them often, are connected to you by strands of energy. Is there anyone with whom you have a less than positive association in your address book? If so, it might be a good idea to delete them from your list. Strands to the objects in your home. You can have cords connecting you to objects as well as to people, animals, and plants. Someone who won't leave their home, even though a hurricane is coming, has stronger cords connecting them to their home than to their body. Most of the objects in your home, even your home itself, have strands of energy flowing between you and them. There is indeed a secret life of inanimate objects. Have you ever noticed that your car will sometimes drive differently after someone else has taken the wheel? Or have you noticed that the washing machine or the dishwasher doesn't work the same if someone else has used it? Just as animals and plants have energy signatures, so do inanimate objects. Physical matter has the ability to absorb emotional signatures of the people around them and even carry echoes from the past. And humans can imprint objects with their energies, even to the point of an identity emerging for the object. A machine or object that is attuned to you and that you have ribbons of energy attaching you to will work better for you than for other people. This is especially apparent in older machines and cars. Your energy is also strongly connected to photos in your home, as well as to your mementos and heirlooms. If any of these have negative associations, they can bring your energy down, even if they're not on display. This is one of the many reasons why it's important to keep your home free of clutter. In Chapter 5, you'll learn more information about the impact of clutter on the objects in your home and your energy connection to them. Sunshine conduits. Have you noticed that there are some remarkable people around whom your energy always goes up, and yet they're not depleted or drained by you or by anyone? These people are like sunshine. You don't drain the sun when you bask in its glow. You simply reflect its light. These beings are plugged into a source of energy and they're conduits for sparkling, glowing strands of light and vitality. They have so many golden strands of light moving through them that it can look like sunshine is radiating out from them. Some gurus and saints are in this category. But most sunshine conduits are ordinary beings who have the ability to allow a waterfall of light to surge through them. Their fortunes can go up, their fortunes could go down, and they can have a range of emotions, and yet they usually aren't diminished because it's not their energy that continually cascades through them. It's a kind of universal energy that's channeled through them. There are times when you and I are also sunshine conduits. There are times when we're connected to the source so that all around us are energized and we are not depleted. In fact, our energy can go up as the energy around us goes up. Because the more that surges out of us, the more that flows into us. We are indeed conduits in those moments. It feels wonderful when that happens. Sometimes we reach that place of meditation. And sometimes it occurs when we're in nature and we feel connected to it all. And sometimes it occurs when we're in love. It can feel like we're in a state of grace. To become a sunshine conduit, one of the most important things to remember is to not take things personally. Shielding conduits. Just as there are some people who are channels for life force energy, there are also people who carry a kind of shielding energy. When you're in their presence, debilitating strands of energy can't penetrate you. It's like you're under their umbrella of protection. You'll often find these kinds of people in helping professions, such as nursing, social work, emergency ward medicine, ambulance services, police work, even prison work. These people aren't wobbled by tragedies that occur all around them. And they feel like a safe haven for those going through a hard time. Of course, this isn't true of everyone in these fields. It's only a small percentage. But you know when you're with one of these beings, they feel like a safe harbor in the storm. Psychics often see colors associated with various energy strands and cords. And people who are shielding conduits have strands that are usually cooler in color. Often steel blue and cool iridescent shades. And like sunshine conduits, They have so many strands, it almost looks like solid color is radiating out around them. They are very rarely exhausted or diminished by those around them. The other thing they share in common with the sunshine conduits is they don't tend to take things personally. The slings and arrows of life just seem to roll off them like water off a duck's back. Plugging into the source. The most beneficial energy strands are the ones that connect you to the greater forces of the universe. There are many names for that force. Creator, cosmic consciousness, God, goddess, source, great mystery, divine benefactor, universal life force, mother nature, love, and so on. Whatever name you use for this force, it is what sustains us. It's the force that connects all things and all beings. You have a strand that connects you to that force. It may be as thin as a thread or as wide as a giant redwood tree, but you are already connected to your source. The stronger this connection becomes, the more balanced your life is. There's many ways to widen and deepen that connection strand with the creative force. For some, it's meditation or yoga. For others, it's music, painting, or dance. For others yet, it's time in nature or in retreat and solitude. No matter what your path is, it is worth exploring. Expanding your strands, connecting you to the creator, may be the most valuable pursuit of life. In this chapter, you've begun to learn what strands are and what kind of strands you might have attached to you. In the next chapter, you'll be discovering exactly which ones you have right now. You'll also discover how to scan your energy body to sense the ones that deplete you and the ones that energize you. Chapter 2. Exploring your strands. Imagine a strong woman standing atop a hill at night under the stars. Her feet are planted solidly on the earth. Her arms are raised towards the heavens. You can see lines of energy flowing out of her chakras. Some are gossamer thin and delicate, like a single strand of a spider web. Some are taut, almost stretched to their capacity. A few lie limp at her feet, coiled like an ancient forgotten rope. Others looked intertwined with each other, like spaghetti. Some appear to be made of light and travel upward to the stars and moon. Others reach down into the earth. Different colors and different sounds travel on each of these filament, ribbons, strands, and cords. Some are moving, vibrating, and undulating, as if in rhythm with the tune of an invisible band. And some seem almost solid and frozen in place. There may be one that looks raging red and jagged. The point of insertion into her body may look raw and even wound-like. If you were able to see the streams of energy flowing into and out of your body, what you would see would look similar to this. You would see that you are connected to every part of the universe through your strands and filaments of energy. Most that flow into you are life-giving and wondrous. However, you might observe some that could debilitate you, like the ragged red strand into the woman on the hill. In this chapter, you'll be learning about the effects of debilitating energy strands and when to take action to release these unhealthy cords. You'll also discover how to see your strands and learn which ones are impacting you. As you learn about negative cords and methods to recognize them, there are some things about energy to keep in mind. Our culture's current paradigm, or way of viewing reality, is that the world is a cumbersome realm of separation. It's a place where fear and chasms between people and places rule. However, a new reality is emerging in which oneness, unity, instantaneous interconnection, and nowness is blossoming. As the ravine between the old and new shrinks, it's valuable to have a foot in each reality in order to bridge the gap. And it's important to honor each reality. Here's some information about the deeper nature of your strands. the deeper nature of energy strands. Your strands allow you to grow. From a spiritual perspective, we are on the planet to grow, and often the way we grow is through imbalance. A plant that has to use great effort to make its way through rocky soil is often much healthier than a houseplant in a protected environment. The challenges you face in life allow you to hone and polish the facets of the gem that you are. They allow you to grow as a spiritual being. As the saying goes, we don't learn humility from our friends. This means that it's often through disharmony that we grow the most. So instead of bemoaning the seemingly negative strands that you have, honor them. Be grateful for the value that you're gaining in life through learning to deal with them. If you have strands that feel like they're diminishing you, it's valuable to recognize that they're all a part of your spiritual journey. It's not an accident what cords are attached to you. The exact kind of cords you have and where they have attached to you is not an accident. There is always a vibrational match. If you want to know what you haven't accepted in yourself or what you judge in yourself, look at the strands that deplete you. If you want to see what you celebrate, love, and accept in yourself, examine the strands that inspire you to greater deeds and deeper love. Nothing can attach to you unless on some level there's an energy match. It is truly the law of attraction. However, if you have negative cords, there is nothing to feel guilty about. It's simply a part of the great dance of life on our planet. We all get negative strands, and we all learn from them. They are not an accident. There is no one out there but you. In the deepest spiritual sense, there's no one out there but you. I talked about this in the introduction, but I'd like to go a bit more in depth into this. What does it mean, there's no one out there but you? In those moments when the doctor thought I'd died, when I was 17 years old, I traveled to the other side and experienced a profound sense of oneness and unity with all things and all beings. This awareness was as natural as breathing and as true and real as anything I've ever experienced. From my vantage point in heaven, I saw that when we are on the earth plane, we feel separate from everything and everyone. We believe that others can harm us, and thus we protect ourselves from the world around us. This collective belief is so strong that when we don't protect ourselves, we are harmed. We believe it, and so it's true. However, this belief is an illusion. The truth is, we are all different facets of an internal gem of light and love and spirit. And as I mentioned before, there is nothing out there that can truly harm us. The challenge is, we don't usually experience this awe-inspiring sense of oneness. There might be occasional moments where we feel this, perhaps in meditation or making love, or in a heightened state of awareness. But for the most part, we're all hooked into the reality of separation. It feels so real, especially when our feelings are hurt or when someone zaps our energy. We are sure we didn't do that to ourselves. Someone else did it to us. How could anyone say any different? I understand this. I also don't usually experience a feeling of oneness and grace. I usually feel separate from others and from the world around me. But the wondrous thing is that I remember the experience of knowing that we are all indeed one. I don't experience it, but I remember it. If you're like me, and you're not generally experiencing a kind of heavenly unity, but you act as if we are not separate from each other, your life will begin to change. Use your imagination to envision a vast, unified field of life. Over time, you'll begin to realize that all strands, both the ones you perceive as negative and the ones you perceive as positive, are all part of you, and that negative strands can reflect qualities you haven't owned, loved, or embraced. This doesn't mean you shouldn't cut cords. You should. This doesn't mean you shouldn't protect yourself. You should. But it's valuable to know that those cords really are a reflection of something within you. When you realize that you are no less the mountain and the oak tree than you are your body, and when you realize that every person you meet is not just part of you, but also part of a more expanded sense of self, you begin to understand the deeper nature of life. We don't always remember our spiritual source, and we often forget who we are. So this chapter is for those times you forget. It will also give you an understanding of why and when to clear your strands. Symptoms of heavy cording. There are often symptoms that go along with any depleting strands that are hooked into you. Of course, there can be many reasons for these symptoms, but sometimes there is someone or something that is sucking your energy. Go through the following symptoms and see if any apply to you. Chronic exhaustion. Sometimes exhaustion can come from overwork, lack of sleep, unhealthy food, doing something you don't like to do, but sometimes the exhaustion you're feeling is from debilitating strands that are attached to you, through which your life force energy is being sucked. If you're constantly exhausted and you can't find a physical reason for it, it might be that someone or something is filtering off your energy. Most often, if it is a person, they are not consciously aware that they're doing it. Sometimes this can be temporary. For example, a friend going through a crisis could be subconsciously siphoning energy from you. But sometimes there's a strong negative cord anchored into you that's been draining off your life force for a long time. Patterns that aren't yours. Sometimes the way you feel or react to a situation comes from another person. For example, Philip was looking for a new apartment to rent. And when the real estate agent showed him a sunny, empty apartment, he suddenly felt depressed. He thought of all the things in his life that weren't going well. He even began to feel that his life wasn't worth living and maybe he should end it all. It surprised him to have these kind of thoughts, because he usually was a very upbeat kind of person. When he got back home that night, the depression still hung heavy over him. He decided to use some of the techniques you'll be learning in this chapter to see if there was a kind of attachment. After he did an inner journey, he felt something had attached to him when he was in the apartment, so he took steps to clear it. Afterward, he felt lighter, like his normal self. The next morning, Philip called the agent and said, "Can you tell me about the last person who lived in the apartment?" The agent was quiet, and then reluctantly answered, "He died suddenly." Philip persisted, "I'm sorry for asking, but I'd like to know how he died." Again, the agent was hesitant, but he finally said, "I heard that he was very depressed and committed suicide." Philip realized that the pattern of depression of the previous occupant still clung to the apartment and had attached to him. He told me he was lucky that he recognized that depression wasn't his and was able to release it. Sue, a massage therapist who attended one of my seminars, told me she had a good example about someone adopting a pattern of behavior because of an energy attachment. She said that she was always a very trusting person. In fact, family members and friends used to constantly comment on how trusting she was. Then almost overnight, she began to be very fearful. She started to triple-check the doors each time she left the house to make sure that she had locked them. Sometimes she'd even drive back home to see if she had actually locked the doors. She also began to check and recheck her purse to make sure her wallet was still in it. Sue said that this pattern of behavior just didn't seem like her. When she was chatting with a new client, he mentioned that he always checked and rechecked his home and car and was worried that he forgot to lock the car. Sue realized her pattern of behavior had started right after she began to work with that particular client. The pattern wasn't hers. It had filtered through the strand that connected the client to her. As soon as she released the strand, she no longer worried about locking doors. She told me she kept the client, but just established healthy energy barriers so that he was in his energy and she was in hers. Here's another example that happened when I was in Mexico teaching a dream workshop. At the dinner break, a woman sat down next to me and proceeded to tell me that she could never sleep. She listed all the supplements and drugs she was taking to get to sleep, and yet nothing worked. She said she had a hard time getting to sleep, and then she woke up often during the night. I had immense sympathy for her. It's awful not to be able to get a good night's sleep. Just as I was about to go to sleep that night, I thought of her and sent her love. In my life, it's rare that I can't get to sleep immediately. But that night, I lay in bed watching the clock. Usually I'm asleep within 30 seconds of closing my eyes. My husband's in awe of my ability to drop off to sleep so quickly. After a few hours, I finally drifted off, only to wake up 30 minutes later. Then, for most of the remainder of the night, I was up about every half hour. Finally, early in the morning, I tried to understand what was happening. It was so unusual. Suddenly, the face of the woman who couldn't sleep came into my mind. I realized that in our chat, I'd formed an energy strand with her, and her sleeplessness became my sleeplessness. I used the wrap, pull, and ground method you're going to find in Chapter 3, and was finally able to sleep for the remaining hours. Random unwanted thoughts. We all have millions of thoughts zipping through our brains every day. Almost all of these thoughts are our own. We can have random thoughts that are seemingly unacceptable to us, and other random thoughts are in alignment with how we see ourselves. This is just the nature of thoughts. Sometimes, however, a random thought doesn't originate in your brain. It's the result of a strand between you and another. Someone will think of you, and the thought travels on the strand between you and them. You might wake up with a random thought about someone, or someone you haven't thought of for a long time may show up in a dream. In my life, those random thoughts usually tell me someone's thinking about me. I love it. It's a kind of psychic telephone system keeping us in touch with each other. These thoughts are often heartfelt. If someone I haven't thought of for a long time pops into my random thoughts, I usually call or email them, and almost always that individual says they were thinking of me with love. This is one of the mysterious and wondrous things I deeply love about life. There are times, however, when random thoughts can be disturbing, and this can be indicative of someone thinking of you in a less than positive way. They can be negative thoughts that have traveled through a strand from another person to you. Hazel, one of my students, shared an experience that she felt was an unwanted random thought from another. She said that seemingly out of the blue, she had a thought about poisoning her cats. She was profoundly and overwhelmingly shocked and upset by the thought. She loved her cats. They were her life companion. She cherished them with a passion. The thought deeply distressed her. Then a few days later, the random thought emerged again. She was visibly shaken by it. As a result, she decided to keep her cats in rather than letting them out into the yard. She told me that the second time it came up, she knew it wasn't her thought, but she didn't understand where it was coming from. However, not long after that, her next-door neighbor was arrested for poisoning cats in the neighborhood. Hazel realized that he probably had attached a strand to her, and his thought about her cats were traveling through the strand to her. She picked them up, but at first thought they were her thoughts. Here's another example of how this works. I was having lunch with a client, and in the course of our conversation, I casually asked her about her ex-husband. She said she didn't ever think of him, and she hadn't heard of him for 4 years. The next afternoon, however, she heard from her son that her ex had called him, asking about her at the same time we'd been talking about him. He hadn't called to talk to her son for several years. She realized that she must still have cords connecting to him, and he must have picked up on her talking about him, and that's why he called. She felt it was time to do a little bit more cord cutting. Emotions that you can't seem to control. Sometimes a cord attachment will cause you to experience emotions that you don't seem to have any control over. Jeanette was our neighbor when we lived in the Central Coast of California. She called me one night in a panic. An acquaintance of hers was in an abusive marriage, and when things escalated with her husband, she called Jeanette.